So, Jessica, we've reviewed our defense capability statements. Let's start screening opportunities and building our pipeline. That means diving into the pursuit phase. But why is positioning so important? Can't we just wait for the tender to drop?
It's all about groundwork, Darian. The pursuit phase happens before a formal defense tender is even released. It's the prep work, gathering intelligence, evaluating whether a project is worth pursuing, and setting yourself up for success long before anyone writes a single word of a proposal.
Okay, so like building the foundation before the house.
Exactly. It's during this phase you can identify opportunities and, crucially, decide whether to invest your time and resources in chasing them. Defense tenders can be expensive to bid for, so you've got to screen them carefully. This is where the structured go-no-go decision framework comes in, avoiding wasted effort on bids you're unlikely to win.
Right. So how does the go-no-go thing actually work? What's the checklist look like?
It's basically a way to weigh up the key factors before committing to a bid. You'd consider things like strategic alignment. Does the project fit with your business goals? Then there's resource availability. Do you have the people and assets to deliver it? And of course, competition. Can you realistically win, or are you facing an incumbent with years of rapport and experience?
Ah, so no blindly jumping into a David versus Goliath battle without a slingshot. Got it. I've got to ask Jess, any real-world examples of this saving someone from a disaster?
Funny you should ask, Darian. Take a mid-size engineering firm in the Northern Territory. They looked at a massive defense radar upgrade project. At first glance, it seemed like a tempting opportunity, the prestige, the dollar signs. But when they used a go-no-go framework, they quickly realized.
Let me guess, they had no radar experience?
Exactly. Not only that, their competition included an industry heavyweight with 30 years of radar expertise. Plus, the client for the project was one they'd barely worked with before. Bottom line, they had little chance to win, and pursuing it would have diverted crucial resources from smaller, winnable projects. They said no go and avoided a financial and resource headache.
I like it. Smart moves, not wasted efforts. It's a disciplined approach, isn't it? Keeps you from biting off more than you can chew.
Exactly. That's what makes the pursuit phase so critical, learning to pick your battles. Strategic decisions made early can be the difference between winning one big tender or losing a string of bids simply because you spread yourself too thin.
All right, Jess. So we've covered the groundwork and the go-no-go framework. That's all making a lot of sense. Now, say a company decides, yes, this defense project is worth going after. What's the next step? How do you actually start positioning yourself to win?
That's where strategic positioning comes in. You don't just bid. You plan how you're going to win. It's all about aligning your approach with the client's priorities. A great tool for this is the Solution Experience Resources Matrix, or CR Matrix. Heard of it?
Oh yeah, sounds fancy. What's it actually do?
It's a simple but powerful framework. You take each major requirement of the project and map out three things: your solution, what you're proposing to deliver, your experience, proof you've done it before, and your resources, how you'll make it happen, like your team or your technical assets. It keeps your strategy cohesive.
And shows you're not just making stuff up last minute, right?
Exactly. For example, say you're bidding on, I don't know, a Brisbane tender for building a secure defence facility. You wouldn't just say, yeah, we can do that. You'd outline your past projects, like a similar facility you've built, and name the specific team members who worked on it. The SER matrix makes sure you've got the evidence and resources to back your promises.
Okay, so it's not just blowing your own horn, it's proving why you're the best choice. Love that. But let's talk teams then. This all sounds good on paper, but who's actually putting all the pieces together?
The bid team, and they're absolutely critical. You need to assemble your A team during the pursuit phase, not after the tender drops. That means assigning clear roles like the bid manager, technical experts, writers, and even graphic designers. Big tenders can have heaps of moving parts, so coordination is key.
I can see it already. Confusion, missed deadlines, people doubling up on stuff. It's chaos without a proper plan, huh?
Exactly. That's why tools like a responsibility chart or even a swim lane diagram can work wonders. They visually show who's responsible for what and when. For that Brisbane example, you'd have your architect focusing on the design, your engineer handling structural details, and your graphics team creating those professional diagrams evaluators love.
All right, practical example time. You promised one, Jess.
Right. A few years ago, there was a Brisbane tender for a base redevelopment. Early in the pursuit phase, the team hit a snag. The requirements included integrating a cutting-edge environmental management system. Their engineers didn't have that expertise on hand, but instead of scrapping the bid, they brought in a consultant early to collaborate. By the time the tender dropped, that consultant had become a real asset and their bid was seamless.
So they fixed the gap before it became a sinkhole. That's brilliant. Shows the value of starting early, eh?
Exactly. Defence evaluators can tell if a bid is a last-minute scramble versus one that's well-prepared and cohesive. Building your team early also keeps your staff motivated and clear on the plan, even on the longer projects. It's not glamorous work, but it's what gets
them. I reckon it shows, Jess. These defence projects aren't just awarded on what you promise, but how you prove you're ready to deliver. I love how all this prep leads to stronger bids. All right, Jess. We've covered building the right team and getting all those pieces in place to impress evaluators. But none of that comes without a cost, right? So, how do you start planning financially when chasing a defence tender? These bids can't come cheap, can they?
Oh, absolutely, Darian. Defence bids can cost hundreds of thousands just to prepare, especially for major contracts. The key is budgeting realistically during the pursuit phase. Start by listing all the likely costs: labour for your team's time, travel costs for site visits, consultants, maybe even developing prototypes.
Wait, prototypes? You mean companies might be building stuff just to bid?
In some cases, yes. For complex equipment or tech, defence might want a mock-up or proof of concept, and that adds to the cost. It's why you need a clear idea of what you're committing to before saying, "We're in." You also need to factor in contingencies. Things like extended deadlines or unexpected scope changes can push up costs quickly.
So, a bit like setting a budget for reno work at home, only for defence, eh? Get the estimate, then add a chunk on top because something always blows out.
Exactly like that, except the stakes are much higher. A stretched budget in this context doesn't just cost money. It can cost your company's reputation if you can't deliver. That's why financial risk management is a big part of the pursuit phase.
All right, walk us through managing these risks. How do companies keep from sinking their own ship?
First, decide early if this bid aligns with your financial capacity. If a tender is worth, say, $50 million, but your company usually works below $5 million, it might be a stretch, even if you win. You'll need to think about cash flow and whether you need additional financing to handle a big project. Then assess what compliance costs are involved. Things like security clearances, indemnities, or insurance requirements.
Yeah, I can see the hidden traps there. Winning the bid isn't the finish line. It's just the start if you haven't planned properly. Any tricks to keep those bid costs down?
Absolutely. A great one is reusing content. Build a library of past proposals. Things like management plans or project profiles that can be tailored instead of starting from scratch every time. And teaming up with a larger partner can help share costs, especially if they bring expertise or resources you'd otherwise have to hire or buy.
Right. So team smarter, not harder. I like it. But what about when plans change mid-pursuit? Let's say new intel comes in. How does a team adapt without losing focus or blowing the budget?
That's where being flexible comes in, Darian. Regular strategy reviews are a must. Maybe a competitor suddenly teams up with another player, or defence shifts a requirement. It's about staying agile. Reassess your SWOT, adjust your bid strategy, or even rethink roles within your team. For instance, you might bring in a tech partner, like if a new requirement emerges you can't handle solo.
Okay, so staying nimble is just as important as getting the numbers right early on. Got it. What about practical exercises for teams? Like, how do you get them up to speed on this planning stuff?
Great question. One exercise we often recommend is a simulated go-no-go decision. You give your team a hypothetical tender scenario, complete with all the complexities, budget, competition, risks, and have them work through a decision-making framework. It's a safe way to train teams on balancing big-picture strategic thinking with cost-focused reality.
I love that. It's like giving your team a dress rehearsal before the main show. Nothing beats hands-on experience, even if it's hypothetical.
Exactly. And it's these exercises that build the discipline to assess opportunities objectively, manage budgets wisely, and adapt to surprises in real bids. It's all part of preparing to win strategically, not just by chance.
All right, Jess. After diving deep into the pursuit phase today, from budgeting smartly to staying agile and teaching teams adaptive strategies, what's the one big takeaway you think our listeners should really hang on to?
Well, I'd say the key takeaway is planning and discipline. Defence bids aren't about reacting. They're about being proactive. Preparing early, making smart decisions, and focusing your energy on opportunities where you have the best chance to succeed.
Exactly. And for everyone listening, if you want to put all this into practice, don't forget to check out the exercise we've set up this week.
Yes, it's a go-no-go decision checklist exercise. You can find opportunities by visiting decnet.com.au, navigating to the project opportunities section, and using the filter tool to find an upcoming tender. Then use the checklist to test if it's worth pursuing. It's a great way to test what we've covered.
And once you've done it, share your outcomes in the forum. It's all about learning from each other, right?
Exactly, Darian. Plus, we'd love your feedback. Just hit reply to the email with your thoughts. Tell us what's working, what's not, or even what topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes.
Oh, and if you've been enjoying the ride, spread the word. Share the podcast with your mates.
That's right. The more people we can help navigate the world of defence tenders, the better.
Well, Jess, it's been an absolute blast diving into all this with you. Thanks for all your insight.
Likewise, Darian. I hope our listeners feel ready to tackle their next defence opportunity. And on that note, we'll catch you all next time.
Cheers, everyone. Stay sharp out there.